Hello, and welcome back to Multiform, an Xbox podcast. This is episode 37, and I'm Tim Shelton, and this week I'm joined by Spencer
Rain,
who's jumping the gun this week, and Gus Harden.
Hello as well.
And this week we have a new logo and a new look. You probably are already seeing it in your podcast app of choice. Most of them have already updated. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think you could say we actually have a logo, because before we didn't really have a logo. It was more of just like a generic Xbox
like
One
Microsoft
X picture.
Paint.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a media file of the Scorpio edition overlaid with our title font, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, so we actually have a logo. It looks really beautiful. It looks really pretty nice in the iPhone podcast app. I noticed it yesterday. It looks really cool.
So what have you guys been playing this week?
Well, I guess I'll go first. With that, I've been playing The Division 2, obviously, still. I've probably played less than, like, 2 hours of Xbox in the last, like, week because of work and just, like, getting things, like, finalized at the move. Still don't have a couch, so that kind of brings my level of wanting to play down a little bit because I just have to sit on the floor.
I was going to say, I visited yesterday, and he has one of those, like, husband, like, cushions on the floor.
Yeah, and I just kind of sit there in poverty and contemplate what life would be like with the couch, but I digress. But anyway, so with that, I finally beat the main strongholds, and I got through all that. The Black Tusk invaded, spoiler, whatever. I feel like you hear about them.
It's in the trailers.
Yeah, so you hear about it. So, and I was on my way to take a control point, and I got obliterated like two times. It was almost like 30 seconds. I just got destroyed by like a huge group of like elites, and so that was not fun. And then I actually finally made it to the control point, and then I died again probably within like 2 minutes. I didn't even have time to like do anything at all, just because everybody, it's like the difficulty just makes a huge jump. And with like, when I mean, playing by myself, it's just like it's too hard.
Tim, why aren't you helping him?
I guess I could. Right after last week's show, I finished up The Division 2, and I'm now World Tier 5, and I've done all the strongholds and
yeah,
all,
I'm
basically
only
everything.
One, so.
Well, yeah, but I can. What's fun is if you played with me and I drop into your world, my World Tier 5, obviously I'll be able to kill people pretty easily,
yeah.
But the gear that I drop will be maxed out at World Tier 1, but at the high end of it, so then I can drop that gear to you, and it levels you up really fast.
Sounds like Borderlands.
Whoa, September 13th. Did we talk about that last week? I think we did.
Yeah, we did, the release date.
Borderlands
Speaking
3,
of,
September 13th.
I played Borderlands the pre-sequel this week with one of my coworkers.
Wow, that's random.
It was a game we started together, so we only play it when we play together because we're on the same like spot in the campaign.
Right.
And we finally got back into it in spite of because Borderlands 3 was announced. What's funny is it's the pre-sequel. And so the whole like oxygen mechanic that, you know, was kind of maligned when the game came out is like just as annoying now as it was when that game came out, like having to constantly run and get oxygen. Now, it might be because I'm still early in the game and you get better O2 like apparatuses.
I didn't play the pre-sequel, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're on the moon and you wear like a space helmet with oxygen, and you have to run to these vents in the like crust of the moon that are secreting oxygen for some reason. You have to run through those to get more oxygen when you're out in the open world. It's kind of annoying because imagine you're in a fight and you just want to be like running at your enemy or
sounds like
him
Subnautica to me, because I know like oxygen management is like huge in Subnautica. Granted, that's like it makes more sense because you're underwater.
Submarine, yeah,
yeah, but it does make the game extra tough.
Yeah, in Borderlands pre-sequel, it's kind of a buzzkill. You know, you just want to be able to run in and use your guns and abilities, and instead you're constantly watching for. But that said, we're not far enough into it yet where I know if, you know, by the end of the game, maybe you get these oxygen helmets that hold so much that it's not an issue anymore.
So I finally beat Metro, got the bad ending, was actually kind of depressing. I won't spoil it. Started a new game plus to get all the collectibles that I missed and achievements, like random one-offs that I missed, and doing that. Already beat the first open world area because I have on the lowest difficulty and I'm literally just sprinting around getting stuff and doing the missions. Yeah, and I got I said that I was going to get all the achievements in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and then after I said that I was like, well, actually never mind, but update on that. I have now gotten all the achievements in the base game and all the DLC that is available. So I'm just waiting for that Atlantis DLC to come out.
And then that reminds me.
100% that eventually.
Speaking of achievements, you said you would or would not get. You finally got that Dragon Age Inquisition achievement, the one that was glitched.
Yeah, so I finally, there's an achievement in the base game of Dragon Age Inquisition to kill 10. I think they're Elder Dragons is what they're called. And it's, if you look it up on like Reddit or Xbox achievements or True Achievements, it's like one of the most commonly bugged achievements on like Xbox One, like over the entire spectrum. Like it doesn't pop for anybody unless you like go through loopholes. So basically I had a save from the first DLC right before you kill the last boss, which is a dragon. And I was like, all right, whatever, I'll just do this. And I did it and I got the achievement. So I don't understand. Can't explain it. Can't explain how that worked, but I literally loaded up a save from like 2015 or 2016. Hadn't played it since then and just fought this dragon. Turned the difficulty all the way down. Took me like 20 minutes because it's a massive health pool, but yeah,
did it. So are you at 100% on Dragon Age Inquisition?
No, I have most of the base achievements, but I don't have any of the DLC stuff, even though I have the definitive edition just because I never played it. I played the first one, but there were two other ones after that, and I can't see myself ever really going back to play those. So, yeah, Metro, Assassin's Creed. I played a little bit of the Assassin's Creed 2 in the Ezio collection. And let's just say that 2009 does not look good, even with a little bit of up-resing on textures and lighting and stuff.
Yeah, I can't remember if I had already started it, but I played quite a bit more of Assassin's Creed 3 Remastered, and the graphic up-resing is more significant, but it's so hard to play the intro to that game.
Because they actually remastered 3 with Ezio Collection. They just like added some more lighting and kind of made the textures a little bit better, I think. I don't even know what they really did.
They didn't do much more.
They didn't do a whole lot.
No, I mean in 3 Remastered. They didn't do a whole lot more than Ezio.
They did because they added more people and like crowds, and they added a little bit of quality of life things. Whereas with Assassin's Creed 2, it's like you're playing Assassin's Creed 2. They didn't change.
But it's not like they put 4K textures in.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody, I watched a thing online, like a side-by-side comparison for that, and everybody in the comments is just like, wow, they threw a filter on it and called it a remaster. Because, I mean, that is what it looks like.
I mean, to be honest, though, I guarantee you, I'd say over half of the people that play that game will have gotten it for air quotes free with the season pass for Odyssey. I doubt many people are going to buy $30 for the standalone.
I don't know. They have to be bringing in money because they've now ported every Assassin's Creed game.
Except one.
Except for one, yeah. To
the best one.
The new consoles, which...
Not really.
It must be low effort, high return, or they wouldn't do it.
Well, I mean, like the Ezio collection, like I said, I mean, I'm sure what they did took like 10 people a couple weeks. Like, I don't think it was very costly to do that.
Yeah, and everything's already there.
Yeah, it's not like, because when you boot it up, have you played it at all?
No, actually, really, I haven't booted that one up yet. I booted up Rogue Remastered.
Yeah, so the only thing they really did was they added almost like a Uplay type menu when you boot it up, and it's like pick the game, basically, and it tells you the timeline over which it takes place.
3 does the same.
Yeah, and so you do that, and then when you hit A on that, it like does the Ubisoft logo again, the old school Ubisoft logo, and then it takes you into the main menu like you're playing the original Xbox 360 version. So, I don't know. I played for maybe an hour. And yeah, it's a lot of memories because I these games I haven't played since they were new. So that was kind of, it's like, whoa, hey, there's Leonardo da Vinci. And
is it 3,000 achievement points for Ezio Collection?
I think so. It's 1,000 each, unless they have DLC, but I don't know, because they individually named the achievements based off the game. Like it says AC2 dash whatever, AC3 or AC Brotherhood dash whatever.
I really appreciate that, because sorting through the achievements on the Master Chief Collection is atrocious. Like, you can't tell what's in what. It's because some of the achievements are cross games, like kill this many brutes, kill this many grunts. But
yeah,
like I wish they had a filter option. Actually, in general,
I don't think there's a filter option for it. It just by name, I guess you could say, if you're doing it like on True Achievements or something. Speaking of that, though, I don't know if the achievements are the actual ones from like the original game, because I've already gotten a ton, and maybe the achievements were just easier to get back in 2009. But I've like, after playing an hour, I've gotten like 4 achievements, which I don't know. I mean, maybe that's common, but it seems like they're pretty aggressive. And they're all like 20 pointers too. Like, they're not 5s or 10s. So I don't know. Some of them seem like 2009 type achievements. Like one's like sprint 100 meters. Like, okay, I did that, escaping guards. Like,
really accomplished something.
Yeah, exactly. You? And like one of them is like be reincarnated as Ezio, which as a it's like be reincarnated as a baby, as baby Ezio or something. I got that. That was like when I texted you and I was like, well, I'm locked in now because I just got an achievement. I've been playing this game for 10 minutes. So I don't know.
So the two games I played this week, well, the first one, so Prey, since it got added to Game Pass, I downloaded it, thought, oh, I'll just try this. I don't even remember why I was playing that rather than something off my backlog. But I played the intro plus a little bit, and I got to the first part where, like, you're staring one direction and something gets knocked over and you turn around and nothing's there. And, like, so I'm in this dimly lit space, and I go over and kind of, like, nudge it, and it turns into one of the aliens that can, like, they're called mimics, turn into stuff. And I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. I don't really want to play this.
There's a little bit of that in Metro when you're off by yourself sometimes. Not as much as, I don't know, you've played parts of the first two. There's not a whole lot of that, like, supernatural type stuff that was in those two games.
I beat the first one, and I'm halfway through Last Light.
Yeah, there's more supernatural stuff even in Last Light than in 2033. But there isn't a whole lot of that in Exodus, but there definitely are parts where it's like, whoa, that was kind of creepy.
The other game I played a bunch of is Crackdown 3. So I'm completely done with the story now. I actually did everything in the game except for get the orbs and do all the races. I did a fair amount of races, but I wasn't going to go around and do all of them. I really liked Crackdown in the way that I liked Crackdown 1, but I beat the entire game and got pretty much everything in 11 hours of playtime, so it wasn't a huge commitment. And the reason I played it is because it was just so, like, it didn't require a lot of forethought. You just play and enjoy it. You know, it's a solid, you know, 7 out of 10 game. People haven't really been talking about it because there's been so many other games to come out that are a lot better, like Metro, like Division 2, like the other stuff that we've been playing. But I enjoyed it. It was on Game Pass. I got it from there. I didn't actually buy the game, but I guess I got my money's worth even if I had purchased it, because, you know, I played this certainly more than the playtime I got out of Battlefront 2's campaign, for example. Let's talk about some news. So as we record this weekend, EA and Respawn revealed Jedi Fallen Order at Star Wars Celebration in Chicago. I know we've all had a chance to, they showed the first story trailer and they announced the release date and they announced a couple of details about the game, and we've all had a chance to watch that trailer. So
watch or wash?
Watch.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I just want to make sure I didn't like miss something. Okay, sorry, what?
So what did you guys think of that trailer?
What did you think? I want to ask you. I want to hear what you have to say first.
So a few days earlier, actually, I think it was just the day before, they had the Episode 9 panel where they revealed the first trailer for Star Wars Episode 9. I can't even remember.
The Rise of Skywalker.
The Rise of Skywalker. And when I saw that trailer, it amped me up. I was like, wow, this feels amazing. It has, you know, Lando in it. We get the tease of Palpatine. And we have Rey dodging the ship. Like, it gave all the right vibes, the music. Like, it made me amped for that movie.
Yeah.
Follow that up the next day. First of all, this panel was kind of slow and uninteresting overall. They had a lot of talking and a lot of, like, the first half of it was really dry. And then the trailer comes, and it's CGI. It's all in-engine footage, but it's not gameplay. And it's basically what you're going to see in the cutscenes in the game.
Right.
And it doesn't really tell us a whole lot, but there are a few interesting things, but it just didn't move the needle like the Episode 9 trailer did.
Right. Yeah, no, that's when I messaged you. My first kind of reaction was, first of all, it looks a lot like Star Wars Battlefront 2 from an art style and from just, I get it, it's Star Wars. They can't really change anything. Like, it's going to look the same species.
But why is everything wet? Like, it all looks glossy and wet.
I don't know. I just, when I was watching, I was like, wow, this reminds me so much of Star Wars Battlefront 2. And, like, that just immediately just completely turns me off. And I don't know. Like you said, I don't know if you said, we were talking about it before. I don't know if you said it then or not. But it's like nothing. I mean, they don't want to show you what's going to happen, obviously. But it's like the trailer didn't do anything. Like, it was just different shots of him, like, running around. Like,
yeah, really telling us his backstory.
Yeah, like dodging stormtroopers and, oh, there's a guy falling and he used the force to save him and all this type of stuff. And I don't know. I almost feel like it would have been for that scene specifically if he just let him fall. I think that would have been cooler.
Well, see, I think what they were implying there is by him catching him with the Force, he revealed himself as a Force user, which put him on the radar and kicks right. off the entire, like, that must Maybe. Have been the intro to the game.
I also
and
thought
that kicks off the entire story of him being sought out by the
Empire. Oh, the Inquisitor?
No, the
dude with the helmet, and the funky looking helmet.
I think it was a girl, and the Purge Troopers.
Yeah.
Purge Troopers. So here, they sent us a press release. I'm going to read a little piece of it here. Play as young Padawan named Cal Kestis, brought to life by Cameron Monahan.
Monahan,
yeah. He's from Gotham and Shameless. He played the Joker on Gotham, who has survived Order 66, the Emperor's secret decree to eliminate all Jedi. Players must pick up the pieces of Cal's shattered past and complete his training and master the art of the iconic lightsaber, all while staying one step ahead of the Empire and its deadly Inquisitors. So I like that they're putting us in the hands of someone that is a Force user. I like that it's set after Order 66 and not like in the Old Republic or in the current trilogy 7, 8, 9 timeline. I like the design of the lightsaber that they showed in the trailer. It looks cool, although they kind of teased that there might be different lightsabers and upgrades throughout the game. They're saying all the right things about combat yeah. and being a Jedi.
No microtransactions, nothing online.
That's another good point. You're right. No, it's single player only, no microtransactions, no multiplayer. Here's another big one, especially following up on the BioWare story last week. No Frostbite. At the bottom of the end of the trailer, it said developed in-engine in Unreal Engine.
That's good.
So they're using Unreal, which is interesting because Apex Legends and Titanfall 2, I believe, used Source. So this is Respawn's first Unreal Engine game, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Star Wars is so divisive right now. Just I want this to succeed. I'm kind of the opposite opinion as far as the time setting. I'm very kind of over the period between episode 3 and 4 because that's what Star Wars Rebels and a lot of the other books that they've had. There hasn't been anything set after episode 6. Although I do agree that the whole like Jedi escaping Order 66 is a really cool idea. And I'm excited to see that. I don't know. The trailer didn't do anything for me, which, like I said, I think they have E3 and EA Play to show us more. So this is just the beginning. I'm sure we'll get a lot more in the next couple months.
All I think about is Star Wars Force Unleashed. It's like the only thing that I think about when I see this. It looks to me almost like it's just
a modern Force Unleashed.
Yeah, it's like not a retelling, obviously, but I think the way that the Force Unleashed played is the only way, or one of, like, there's, I feel like there's very few ways a single player Force user based story can actually be played. And I think that
like over the top.
Well,
and the gameplay of those games was an iteration of what was done in Jedi Outcast and Jedi
exactly
Academy.
So it's like there's only I'm worried that it's just going to be a modern like same thing. It's like the same thing that we played 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When these like games first came out, because like there really is only one way I feel like you can play these sort of games. The only other way is if you're doing Knights of the Old Republic, where if you wanted to play as somebody who uses blasters instead.
Yeah.
Like,
well, actually, since you're trying to hide, I wouldn't be surprised if
maybe there's like a stealth mechanic. Well, yeah, possibly you might have to, but
yeah, at least in the beginning of the game. Yeah. I'm worried that this is going to be like Force Unleashed, yeah, and it's going to be a on rails, yeah, like narrative, like single player.
I feel like it's going to be a very, yes, linear progression based storyline.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I mean, which is fine. I mean, they're like, I mean, the Force Unleashed, both of the games I thought were very good for what they are. I mean, and then you have Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider is a very linear adventure.
I could see it being a lot more
game,
like that,
where it's like, yeah, it's like it's not, it's like a faux open world,
like small scale open,
yeah,
world.
Exactly.
But it takes it from Metroidvanias, where you have to get gear to progress,
yeah,
which would be cool. But I'm worried that this game, so Titanfall 2 was an amazing first player experience, but it was short. So it was a great campaign, but I believe it was only 6 to 8 hours long. And if this game has no multiplayer, no anything, those are all great things, but $60 to roll your dice again, mm-hmm, on EA, even though this is Respawn and hopefully it's going to be a better product, that's a lot for a 6 to 8 hour, yeah, campaign.
I mean,
in 2019.
It's $60 for what is essentially an interactive movie, in my opinion.
Well, if the combat's done, yeah, well, that's a little unfair.
Well, I mean, it's just interactive. Like, it's all it is.
Imagine if it was like, I know none of you have played Sekiro, but, or like Bloodborne or Dark Souls, but imagine if it was like that level of like detail as far as like actually having to think tactically and not just hit X to force lightning, or, you know, hit Y to force push.
Just run in.
Or just run around and dodge and throw your lightsaber around, like something actually challenging. Which
is Force Unleashed. Exactly. That's how that played.
So when you were saying that about how Force Unleashed and those types of games can only be done that way, I was wondering if, well, maybe now that that's 10 years in the past, if, and it's different studios and they kind of have their own, I guess, way about it, I wonder if they've figured out a way to make it more realistic, mm-hmm. and more like kind of more down to earth. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah. Well, like, imagine if it was like the new Assassin's Creed games where you have a parry stance and like you have your sword up to block, and then you can parry and attack and block and all that.
I think because the nature of what it is, and that you're trying to stay low key, or at least assumedly you're trying to stay low key, who knows? They're not going to have like a mission where you pull a Star Destroyer out of the sky.
It's like the Metal Gear Solid version of Star Wars games, where it's like, it's a lot more stealth based.
Yeah. One last thing I want to talk about. I did think it was really cool where he was like working, was like dismantling the, Republic era Star Cruisers, like the Venator class cruisers. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was really cool. I agree. They had cool shots in it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about EA. Like, yeah, the game might suck, but it's probably going to look really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they showed us really nothing. Like, this is all story. And to be honest, the story is probably going to be solid because it's a Star Wars game. It's the gameplay that is going to make or break this thing.
Yeah, these were all just cinematics.
Battlefront 2's story wasn't solid, and it was Star Wars. So...
I don't know. The Iden Versio story was solid. It was that they put in filler from episode 4 and
all the main characters. Yeah, all the original characters were shoehorned in.
I think they were hoping that if Iden's storyline didn't take off, that the nostalgia of using these characters that we know and love would kind of help put it on crutches to the finish line.
See, and I think that game would have been better if you had 10 Iden Versio missions instead of 4 or whatever it was.
So I will say another thing about this is, since it's between 3 and 4, that really opens up the door to a ton of more characters than in Battlefront 2, because most of Battlefront 2 takes place after episode 6, so you couldn't have like Boba Fett in it, you couldn't have the Emperor in it, you couldn't have Darth Vader in it, you know, stuff like that. So like, I know you don't necessarily want to depend on and use classic characters as a crutch, but I think for a game like this where you really have to hit it off and you have to sell 5-10 million copies, I think people, when they hear like, oh, the Emperor's in it, or oh, Boba Fett's in a couple missions, or, you know, that type of stuff, I feel like you almost have to use that type of firepower now to get in the door, to get back in people's good graces, because right now, like we said, I mean, EA Star Wars games have been pitiful.
So they announced the game's coming out on November 15th. That's the latest game we've had announced with a date, I think, so far this year.
Yeah, because we've really only had that, Borderlands, and then Outer Worlds, August 8th or whatever.
And Control.
Right. But, whatever.
So, I mean, it's right in the middle of the fall season. It's basically taking the slot that would have been Battlefront 3 if it had been the off-Battlefield year.
Right.
And also, so they're doing EA Play the Thursday, Friday, I think, before E3, the week before. And they said they're going to have like live video streams, kind of like Nintendo Direct streams, each one themed around a game during that week. So it seems like the week before E3, we could probably expect a gameplay reveal at one of those streams dedicated to a Star Wars.
Yeah, I think so too. I remember I texted you and I said, I hope it doesn't get overwhelmed by Cyberpunk, because I feel like Cyberpunk will probably come out about the same time, maybe a week or two earlier, and I don't know, I don't want it to be like the afterthought game, you know. I just feel like Cyberpunk, I mean, they're not exactly the same, but they are kind of similar, but I don't know, we'll see.
Do you think Cyberpunk will be the crater that Red Dead Redemption 2 is, or is it less so because...
I think it's less so,
it doesn't have general audience appeal to, like, kids and people that are not hardcore RPG, people that know CD Projekt Red, know The Witcher.
Right, yeah, I don't think it'll be as big as... I don't think... Of course it won't be as big as Red Dead, but I think it'll be similar in that I think games like Jedi Fallen Order will have sales impacted. I mean, Call of Duty will be fine, but Jedi Fallen Order will be impacted, I think.
So would you call, to sum this up, would you guys say cautiously optimistic?
Skeptical.
Or skeptical?
I'm hopeful. Like I said, I'll wait till E3. E3 is when I'll make my decision.
Yeah, it's also a situation with it being a single player and not having a multiplayer component and stuff. There's really no downside to waiting and seeing. Like,
yeah,
you're not going to miss anything if you buy this a few months after.
I mean, I guess just
don't buy it at all and then watch the whole thing on YouTube.
No,
the Gus Harden method.
Yeah, I want to experience it if it's a decent game. But you know, in a packed fall season when EA's failed to deliver on their last three or four games, like,
well, I mean, I think as of right now, the only other game that I would realistically be playing at this time that'll be new is Cyberpunk, because Outer Worlds comes out in August and hopefully we'll be done with it by November. And I'm probably not going to get Borderlands 3 just because I'm not a huge Borderlands fan. So if nothing else, I would get it just because there's nothing else going on, because we don't have a Forza this year.
Because
we
it's
don't
Star have any... Wars.
Yeah.
That's
and
why.
What about Watch Dogs 3 set in London? No,
I didn't play the first two, so...
But what if it's set in London?
I don't care. No. And there's no Assassin's Creed this year. So this is a good window for it in that sense.
Hmm. Yeah, a good window to try something new, but
we'll actually see. That actually reminds me, I wonder if Ubisoft has anything, because they don't have anything major from their major flagships franchises lined up for
this
fall.
They're gonna be
no Tom Clancy game,
just gonna be developing
no
more
AC.
Of Siege and
I
Division
guess, I think
Division.
We could be hearing about something, because Yves Guillemot did an interview with IGN. And he teased that they are working on something, Splinter Cell, that they haven't announced yet. So there could be Splinter Cell this fall if it were announced.
That
sounds
fun.
And we definitely know Watch Dogs 3 is coming.
Yeah.
I feel like Watch Dogs 3 doesn't get as much hype as most of their other franchises. But I'm cautiously optimistic for that one, even without having seen anything, just because I enjoyed the first two. And London is a cool city to set the game in. I'm just hoping maybe they borrowed some of the Assassin's Creed advancements to put into this game to help kind of up it a little bit in the RPG department. Maybe not with combat specifically, but with some of the abilities and stuff. But now we're getting
or like the off. Division 2. I like the ability system in that, maybe.
I'm not a huge fan of the ability system in Division 2, but let's not go down that track separately. So our next story, Dragon Age 4. Kotaku did a follow-up piece to their BioWare story about Anthem. And it was called The Past and Present of Dragon Age 4. And Spencer, you put in some notes here. I'm going to let you kind of go through it, because I have not played the Dragon Age franchise hardly at all. I played a little bit of Inquisition. That's about it. So,
right, yeah. So, yeah, Jason Schreier put out kind of a follow-up to his Anthem bit. This one was all about Dragon Age, like you said. And, yeah, I pulled a few quotes. The first one I thought that kind of struck me was, I'll just read the whole thing. A tiny team stuck around to work on a brand new Dragon Age 4, codenamed Morrison, and these are the people that they took off to work on Anthem. That would be built on Anthem's tools and codebase. It's the game being made now, because the original version was called Joplin, and they just completely canceled it. I think in like 2017, they just canceled it straight up. In this version of the fourth Dragon Age is planned with a live service component built for long-term gameplay and revenue. One promise from management, according to a developer, was that in EA's balance sheet, they'd be starting from scratch and not burdened with the first 2 years of money that Joplin, the first version of Dragon Age 4, had already spent. So I saw that and I was like, great. They're literally turning Dragon Age into a live service game, like Anthem, like The Division, like Destiny.
Mobile gaming.
And yeah.
Everybody's talking like that's the new future. Like every game has to be a live service game. I don't feel like that is... That seems to be already burning out. If you're not a game, if you're not Destiny, Fortnite, or a few others, this model is not working for you.
Yeah, and the other two quotes that I pulled out were related to this. The next one was, I forget who he was quoting, somebody that's kind of higher up. I don't know if it was Casey Hudson or what, but it wasn't talking to him directly, Jason Schreier directly. It was from like a tweet or press release or something. But he basically said, too early to talk details, but when we talk about live, in quotes, it just means designing a game for continued storytelling after the main story. Which, I don't know your guys' experience, but in my experience, anytime there's been a live component to a game after the main game is completed, it's not been continued storytelling. It's been crap. And it's just been ways to monetize. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess... Maybe it's a good thing they're doing this with Dragon Age, so Mass Effect won't have to do this eventually when it comes out in 2025, but I don't know. It's just disappointing. And then the last quote that I picked out was, One person close to the game told me this week that Morrison's critical path or main story would be designed for single player, and that goal of the multiplayer elements would be to keep people engaged so that they would actually stick around with post-launch content. Single player downloadable content like Dragon Age Inquisition's Trespasser, while often excellent, typically sells only a fraction of the main game, according to developers from BioWare and elsewhere across the industry. So, I mean, that's disappointing to hear. I guess it makes sense from a pocketbook perspective. Like, that's why we didn't get DLC for GTA 5. That's why we didn't get DLC. We're not going to get DLC for Red Dead Redemption 2, despite those games being amazing and people wanting more single player content. Those developers are like, well, why did we do that when we'd make pennies when we could just kind of monetize it in a live service way and make a ton on the back end?
Which is interesting because we as in gamers are to blame for this, because for every person that says, oh, I'll just spend $20 on microtransactions because I want this thing and you know, I just do it this one time, every person that does that is feeding into that system. And I'm guilty of it. I've spent money on microtransactions in my gaming career. And
like buying the map for Forza Horizon 4?
Yeah. It was $3. They got me with the cheapness.
Yeah, I might do it, honestly, to get the achievement.
I was missing one stupid map thing, and I wasn't going to go through a guide to try and figure out one thing I was missing. So yeah, for a few bucks. I think I had a gift card, too. But yeah, and I put $5 in Destiny 1 to buy some Eververse cash, and I don't know, like, did that matter? Like, it didn't really make a difference. I guess I got value out of it.
Yeah, but I put money into Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I finally, I buckled and spent $5 on a costume. So,
see, we're part of the problem.
I wasn't going to say it, but I'll come clean.
We're not going to talk about me in World of Tanks. We're not.
Or me, honestly. I mean, you were much worse than I am, but I still spent way too much money on World of Tanks.
But at least that's fair because it's a free-to-play game.
Yeah.
You're getting the game for free.
Yeah, usually.
And it's up to you to decide to invest further. Like, I've played World of Tanks, and I've never spent a dollar, but that's fine. Yeah. I've worked my way up into tank
tier 4. It's like, well, I'll spend up to $60 on any game that I get for free. And then just...
I was going to say, Gus and I blew past $60.
Yeah, I can spend a lot more than $60. But I don't know. Getting kind of as an aside, this talks about multiplayer for Dragon Age. I guess you didn't play Inquisition. Or did you?
Played a little bit of Inquisition, but it's just not my style game.
Either of you ever play the multiplayer for Dragon Age Inquisition?
I didn't even know it had it.
No.
Yeah, and I remember it. I played it a little bit. I probably may have spent less than an hour playing it. And I don't even remember what was going on in it. It was just there with get match made. And then it reminds me of the Leroy Jenkins thing where it's like they all go in and they fight a whole bunch of enemies and then whatever. It would end differently. It's like it's kind of like if you run into a dungeon, kill some enemies, and you get loot. And what was even the point?
Actually, I was going to say, it's mentioned in this article that was an EA mandate, was to figure out a way to slide multiplayer.
Rise of the Tomb Raider had multiplayer.
Yeah, the second one.
Or Far Cry 3 had multiplayer.
God of War Ascension.
RPG, action adventure RPG, whatever, open world RPG that has ever done multiplayer, even semi-decently, was Assassin's Creed. I actually had whole lot of fun playing Assassin's Creed Brotherhood online.
Those weren't terrible,
The problem is, just like Call of Duty, there was a new version of it every year, and it burnt people out.
Yeah.
It couldn't be sustained doing that every year.
I would play that with five friends at once. That was one of the last games that I remember actually having large groups of people playing on the 360.
It was I'm sure a lot of people slept on it and didn't even play it or try it, but it was genuinely an evolution of multiplayer, the whole passive and stealth, and it was kind of like spies versus mercs in the old Splinter Cell games. It was revolutionary.
It was a very interesting way to do it. Like I said, and that's the only one that I have ever seen do it right. That hasn't been multiplayer oriented from the beginning. So
let's go back for a minute and let's talk about live service games and microtransactions. So I think the difference between spending some money on World of Tanks, which is a free game, or spending money on Assassin's Creed Odyssey, is these games are complete experiences, particularly Odyssey. Odyssey is a complete game with 100 hours of content. And if you choose to buy a cosmetic-only item with microtransactions, it's completely a choice. compare that to Anthem or Dragon Age or another game where Anthem specifically, it's an undercooked game that has almost no loot, and then they want you to buy cosmetic armor. It feels bad because it feels like it was designed to get money out of you, not to give you a complete package and make an optional money purchase. So if you're going to make Dragon Age a live game, then it needs to be a good game. It's fine that it's a live game if it's a good game.
Right. I think Odyssey is a good kind of marker as far as a game that's almost 90% single player, but then it has the little bits, kind of elements of live service-ish, where they inject timed missions or weekly missions, things like that that you can do. And then the microtransactions are only cosmetics. They're not going to make... I mean, there are the XP boosters and things like that, but they're not going to make the game easier for you. They're not going to make the game harder. It's just kind of to make your character look cooler or whatever, or your horse look different, your ship look different, that sort of thing. And I think that's what a game like Dragon Age should strive to do. Like, Anthem is its new IP, is a whole new IP. That's where you can do your experimenting. That's where you can have your more... I guess, whatever live service you want to do. But I think for a game like Dragon Age, it doesn't make sense
to take an RPG and make it Destiny.
Yeah, and to make it... Exactly. That just seems like EA being lazy. Because they're like, oh, we have an established IP. It's going to sell more than a new IP would. So let's make it a live service. I feel like that's what's going on here. Because I think, straight up, if you had Dragon Age 4 and Anthem release on the same day, Dragon Age 4 is going to sell more. Because it's an established franchise. It's established IP. So I think... What they should do instead of trying to copy games that are nothing like what Dragon Age is, you should look at a game like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which I'm not saying Odyssey is perfect, but if you want to get microtransactions and make money that way, that's the perfect way to do it for that game. Get cosmetic upgrades.
Yeah, and earn it. Make a good game with cosmetics.
Which is really disappointing. I really hope The Elder Scrolls 6 doesn't do that. If you're listening to this, Bethesda, please make everything earnable in-game and not make me have to pay extra money for it. Because I miss those days where the coolest armor was actually in the game and you didn't have to pay for it.
And you just had to work for it.
Yeah, like you just worked for it. Exactly.
Do fun quests.
Exactly. Make good quests to make me earn this stuff. Don't make me pay you $5. I already paid you 60 plus. Like, come on.
It's a shame that the only thing I can be bothered to get excited about with...
Cyberpunk, man.
No, I mean with EA is stuff that has Respawn at least partially attached to it.
I guess.
Because Titanfall and Apex and now maybe Jedi Fallen Order, if it ends up being good, at least Respawn is...
Yeah, I guess.
Like, Titanfall 2 had microtransactions. Never once did I even consider that it was necessary. Like, it was a 100% complete game with a good story and a good multiplayer, and there were cosmetic, like, skins for your Titan.
The gunplay in Titanfall 2 is some of the best I've ever experienced. But quickly, going back to the Cyberpunk thing. I mean, that's like the shining beacon where it's like, we know we're going to get everything we paid for. Like, there's not going to be stupid microtransactions like that.
Because I don't know. CD Projekt Red really values their players.
Yeah, they're a good company.
Witcher 3 came with an open letter from the developers inside every physical copy.
Yeah, and the soundtrack on a separate disc and that. Yeah, that's a quality studio right there.
That values their fans. So let's move on. So they announced that Inside Xbox is coming back for the month of April. They basically do it monthly, but they took a few months off for the holidays. It's going to be the day after this podcast airs or goes live, so Tuesday, April 16th at 2 p.m. Pacific or 5 p.m. Eastern. The reason this one is going to be bigger than others is, one, they're announcing Xbox's E3 plans. So I assume that's going to be they're going to announce Xbox Fan Fest. They're probably going to announce the date and time of their Xbox showcase. You have to think, you know, normally they go on Sunday, but with EA and PlayStation tapping out, they really could move to Monday if they wanted to this time.
Yeah, but I think wouldn't more people watch it on Sunday? Like, Sunday night's more prime time-ish than Monday night.
Yeah, that's true. And you have to think they probably rented... Well, actually, they didn't have to rent it because it's the Microsoft Theater, but they probably booked...
They still book it, yeah.
Having that months in advance before Sony ever said, hey, we're going to back out.
They probably had a contract for X number of years, too.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's the Microsoft Theater, but they have more than just their press conference, because then they have the press gets to play the games before E3 opens, and then they have the fan fest all week. So, I mean, it's not just the same days as E3. They could actually run it the full week.
Right.
But other things that I think are going to be announced or that possibly could be coming, the latest rumor is that I think this is going to be the opportunity for them to announce the Xbox One S all digital edition. And the reason I think that is the latest rumor says that it's supposed to come out in the United States by the end of April, which means in the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and in Europe by May 7th. More interestingly, the rumor also says that the price is 229 euro or the equivalent, which is 250 US.
That seems about right.
I thought that sounded way too high. Remember, really? I said it needed to be 150.
Well, the Xbox One S is 300, isn't it?
Yeah, but it regularly goes on sale for 250 or 200 occasionally with the Minecraft
edition. Well, I mean, you started at 250 and then you
just put it on sale.
Your first sale, you put it at 175 or 199.
I guess if by this fall you can get one at Christmas for 150, 175, 200, that is probably the prime price point, but 250 to me just seems a little high. Like 225 even would be a little better.
Yeah, I don't even know if it really matters at this point because I'm sure there's still consumers out there. There's definitely consumers still out there. I just don't think at this point in the console generation if it really matters as far as numbers in general. Like I think it's almost more of a feeler, like are people interested in this type of technology? But I don't know.
So our next news story actually ties in because I think it's going to be something announced at Inside Xbox. So, Age of Empires Definitive Edition. It's been out for a while on Windows 10 PC. There's been no signs of it coming to Xbox One. If you remember, the March Inside Xbox stream was supposed to have Age of Empires at it. We talked about it on the show, and they pulled it at the last minute, and they couldn't say why. So, I think it's going to probably be back now because it's been another month. So, whatever it is they were going to announce that ended up not being ready is probably ready. But some people noticed that on the Xbox Store, Age of Empires Definitive Edition, sorry, the Xbox Windows Store, was showing as free, but when you click on it, it would still charge you full price. So what this means is either it's being added to Game Pass, which is currently Xbox only, so that means it's also coming to Xbox, or Game Pass is coming to PC, because otherwise, how would they do a PC game free on Game Pass? It's either that or they're giving away the game and they're announcing games with gold for Windows 10. Those are, I guess, the only three possibilities I can think of. But in all three of those scenarios, it either means the game is going free through games with gold or through Game Pass. Or I guess maybe they could be doing a free weekend, but they've never done that on Windows before that I'm aware of. I don't know. It just, I can't think of what they could possibly be teasing for Age of Empires and why it would be showing up as free in the Windows Store. If they ported this to Xbox, would you want to play it?
No.
Really?
No, RTS is on console. Just give me a brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
Stellaris is an exception because that was like mapped perfectly.
Yeah, it was done properly.
But it's also not a real-time strategy, really.
Yeah. It's like grand strategy and real-time kind of mixed together. Hmm. It's like grand strategy mixed with real-time, with RTS combat.
Yeah.
Which even then, hardly.
Oh yeah, hardly.
It just plays like RTS, but you don't actually have any control over it really, other than telling them to disengage. Mm-hmm. Like you don't control formations or anything. But, I mean, well, isn't the Definitive Edition? It's just
the first game remastered.
It's just the first game remastered. So
well, and like, they already remastered two on PC.
I remember that.
And it's called the HD Edition, I think. And they've also remastered Age of Mythology. So, I mean, I'm a huge Age of Empires fan, but Age of Empires 2...
On the computer I am, but yeah, I can't imagine myself playing it on Xbox One.
If it comes to Game Pass, I'll probably play some of it, because usually if it's free and it's a game I'm interested in, I'll try it. But you're right, I don't know that I could see myself buying it.
So I was cleaning some stuff out in my closet this afternoon, and in one of my boxes I found my copy of Age of Empires 3 for PC, which is the only one. I played 2 a lot in high school on our computers in high school, but 3 is the one where I actually play at home a lot. So if I ever get a PC again, I definitely play it.
This is just like a side thing that's kind of fun. Somebody put Age of Empires 2 on a flash drive when Spencer and I were in high school and kind of circulated it around like the school mainframe.
I'm pretty sure you told this story on
this
the podcast,
was with, this was
like
with
three
Halo.
Or 4 weeks.
This was, no, because somebody, first it was Halo, then it was Age of Empires, and I remember like we would have like 8-person battles and like business foundations, just like but like, it'd be like 4 people in the class that I was in, and then 4 people in like the room next to us, and we would just be like trash talking when we're supposed to be like working on like management skills or whatever. And then after Age of Empires, it was Minecraft. Somebody put Minecraft on a flash drive, and that was like wildfire. This is probably like what, 2012?
Yeah.
So
2011, 2012.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen on the news the epidemic of Fortnite being played by kids on their phones in class.
Well,
at least we had taste in our games.
Oh, yeah, come right on.
Yeah.
Okay, when I was in school,
there were Commodores in every room.
No, so I'm not that much older than you, geez. We used to play Snake. That was on the DOS computers in the typing lab.
I remember.
And eventually they were upgraded to Windows 95 or whatever.
Bug's Life.
But we still just had like Centipede is the one I remember having the most time.
Do you remember what was it? Yeah, it was like Bug's Life, right?
Or I don't remember that.
It was Bugdom. Bugdom was the one. Wow. We're going to talk about nostalgia right there. Bug's Life was like the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Bugdom. I remember I got on YouTube recently and watched some playthrough of that, and I was like almost like my eyes almost melted out of my skull. But just a nice little aside there.
Oh my gosh, Bugdom.
So moving on to the quick hits of the week, the quick stories. The Xbox Spring Sale is here. As you're hearing this podcast, it's live. I think they said they had something like 500 games on sale, digital, for Xbox One or Xbox 360.
A lot of the usual offenders, like your Just Causes and your Batman collections and your Assassin's Creeds.
Yeah, there's like, you can always expect every Metro game to be $5, every Saints Row game to be $5, every Mass Effect game is $9.99 or $7.99. You can always get The Witcher 3 Game of the Year Edition for $15,
which is such an insane value proposition. It's even if it was, I think it's usually 20. Even if 20 though, like that, 100% worth it.
Yeah, there's
so much content.
There's a lot of really good stuff on sale. Some of the most recent stuff that's on sale for a good price. I think Metro Exodus is $40.
Mm-hmm.
Far Cry New Dawn is $20.
Yep. Battlefield 5 was 40.
No, it's 30.
Really? Oh,
that's and because it's 50% off.
Might have been a pack with Battlefield 1.
There's another one that was on sale for a pretty good price. What are some other recent releases?
Call of Duty.
Wasn't Anthem. It wasn't Division.
It wasn't Division 2. Yeah, I looked for that. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Spec Ops The Line was $5.
I was trying to talk you into getting that. That is a really fun game. You should play it. Oh, so the other thing is, with the spring sale, Xbox Live started messaging people to tell them that items on their wish list are on sale.
I'm going to look right now because I haven't actually played Xbox since Thursday.
I don't think you can see the messages from Xbox Live in your messages on the website. I think you have to go to your phone or your Xbox to see them. But so what's interesting is, so they didn't announce this. It just happened. And it happened to me. But the funny thing is I got a message that said, hey, we just want you to know Just Cause 4 is on your wish list and it's on sale. The funny thing is Just Cause 4 is not on my wish list and it never has been on my wish list. So why is it that game that they sent and said
That's
is on
weird.
My wish list? There are, in fact, 2 games on my wish list that are on sale. One is Thronebreaker and the other is, I don't remember, but why didn't they send me those games because they're actually on my wish list? It made no sense.
Just maybe a message misfire.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a bug because this seems like it's a new thing. But, you know, people have called for this for a long time. Like, I really like the wish list feature. And now that it'll tell you when the games are on sale, it's even better. I kind of wish we could customize the notification. Like, I wish it was more of a pop-up or a text message or something that was a little better than just a Xbox Live message. But it's better than nothing. Another quick hit. Sniper Elite V2 got its release date announced. It's coming out.
Remaster.
Yeah, remaster, re-release.
So Sniper Elite V2 came out many years ago.
May 14th, 2019, and you get 10% off if you digitally pre-order. You know, they gave away Sniper Elite V2 as a game with gold, and it's backwards compatible. So, I mean, I don't know what the market is for a remaster of this game. But
yeah, I've played maybe an hour of that game, and it's a very cool premise, kind of sneaking around almost like a modern Assassin's Creed, fighting Germans in World War II. And it is a really cool premise, and the missions are pretty cool. But I don't know. They must be really popular. They're cranking out, what, fourth one now or fifth?
Fifth one,
yeah. So these games got to be selling a lot.
Well, I think they make them on a a reasonable enough budget that if they sell 2 million, it's like a huge success.
Yeah, I think so.
I've beat Sniper Elite V2. I've beat Sniper Elite V3. I haven't started 4 yet, but I will at some point because it's on Game Pass. They're decent games. They're also like, they're kind of relaxing because they're mostly sniping, which isn't super high stress. Kind of reminds me of Ghost Recon Wildlands. The way I played it, I had a sniper with a huge scope on it. So mm-hmm. I do a lot of sniping and sneaking. But it's like that, only a little more, you know, it's set in, you know, more jungle environments and desert environments, so it's a little different. But next up, Disney Plus, the Disney streaming service, was announced this week, and they went through all their content that was coming to that. They had 5 Marvel TV series coming, 2 Star Wars TV series coming, all the National Geographic backlog, Simpsons, 30 years of Simpson episodes, the everything ever from the Disney Channel, all the Disney classic movies from the Disney Collection Vault. And they, hidden deep down in their announcement, they did announce that they're coming on launch day with an Xbox One app. And I gotta say, I'm signing up for the service because it's got everything Star Wars, everything Marvel, and everything Disney all in one place. And if you buy a year, it's $5.80 a month, or if you buy it monthly, it's $7. So $7 a month, when you compare that to Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, any of these others, as far as pricing goes, that's a pretty good deal if you ask me.
I bet they'll raise the price after the first year. Just get people in the door with the initial price and then hike it.
I mean, we just saw YouTube TV raise their prices this week, and a couple of weeks ago, Hulu raised their prices, DirecTV Now, all these streaming
Netflix
services.
Raised theirs last year.
Yep. They actually, I think it just goes into effect this month. So yeah. You're right.
Like $13 an hour or $14?
$13.99 or is it $14.99 now?
I can't remember.
Well, that's for the premium tier plan. They have a $12. I think $13 is the mid-tier plan now. And the last story is they announced the Game Pass games for April. I already said I tried Prey. That one's already available. The Golf Club 2 was available on April 11th. Here's the other big hitter besides Prey. Monster Hunter World coming April 18th. The Walking Dead: A New Frontier also on April 18th. Life is Strange 2, Episode 2 on April 24th, and Resident Evil 5 on April 25th. I think the only ones here that are really like takeaways for me is I already tried Prey, and I'll probably give Monster Hunter World a shot. You know, Life is Strange and Walking Dead are both kind of episodic games, so, and the Golf Club, I guess you're into or you're not, but nothing too exciting here except for Monster Hunter World. I feel like a lot of people will probably check that one out because of the buzz that was around it when it came out.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, Resident Evil 5, maybe. Resident Evil is a pretty popular franchise.
Yeah, and 5, I think, was fairly decent. Was 6 the one that was maligned, or was it 5?
Whatever one was first person, that was the one people hate.
Well, no, people like that one. That's 7. It's either 5 or 6 that generally wasn't as well liked. You should look up the Metacritic scores for the Resident Evil franchise, see what the winner is. Yeah, and that's, I can't believe that...
6, people didn't like 6.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So this is the one that was fairly well-liked. So we're less than 60 days till E3 now. So we've got about, well, like 2 months, so a little less than 2 months to E3. So that's why we're starting to pick up on all these release dates like Control and Jedi Fallen Order and stuff. So things I think are only going to get faster now. And even more exciting, this is like leak season. Well, that's it for this week. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton, or you can email the show with feedback or questions to questions@multiformpodcast.com.
I'm Spencer Rain. Follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain, and then Rain101 on Xbox Live.
And then I'm Gus Harden. You can follow me on Twitter at Gus_Harden.
See you next week.
New episodes of Multiform post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice.